You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
Hey guys, it's Allie. Welcome back to Infertile AF, the podcast. This is episode 254 called Charlie Dice. All right, everybody. I love this conversation today with this really cool, interesting woman named Charlie Dice. Charlie reached out to me, emailed me, and in her email, she said, I'm a 36-year-old married, childless turned child-free woman who's been through 8 years of infertility struggles that included 3 miscarriages and 1 failed round of IVF. So today we are going to talk about everything that Charlie and her husband went through, and then when they made the decision to pivot and move on from their infertility journey and where they are today. In short, she said it was one of the best decisions she ever made, and we're going to get into all that. So as you guys know, I love sharing all different perspectives, all different stories in this, you know, infertility and fertility community. And Charlie's story is so interesting, and so many things she says really resonated with me, and I hope that it does with you guys too. So today, you know, she's really active in what she calls the after infertility space, so we're going to talk about all that too. So thanks to Charlie, and without further ado, this is Charlie's infertility story. Charlie, how are you today?
I'm good. Allie, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for doing this. So I'm glad you reached out to me because you wanted to be a guest on the show, and here we are. So I know that you had an 8-year infertility journey. So let's just start from the beginning. Did you always want to be a mom?
No. And I get some flack for saying that based on, you know, the content that I put out there. But no, I was never one of those girls that's all I dreamed of. Like, you know, I had visions in my head of what my family would look like. I was always very career oriented. I loved school. I loved travel. I love my hobbies. So yeah, I think I took a non-traditional route to fertility in that respect, because I just never had that burning desire until I hit about 30. My husband and I had been married about 6 years at that point. And he's a little bit older than me, like two years, not that much. But, you know, I could tell he was ready if we were going to do it. And I thought, well, you know, that biological clock started ticking at 30. And I thought, well, you know, let's do this. My brother and his siblings had already had children, and we were kind of the last ones in our immediate family. So yeah, so we started trying, and all of our siblings had no issues. You know, it's the whole, they look at each other and it happens sort of thing. So we figured that we would be the same. And unfortunately, it didn't turn out that way for us. So.
Okay. So let's get into it. What happened when you guys started to try?
Yeah, it took about 2 years before we even got a positive pregnancy test. And based on my age at the time, like the OB had said, you know, try for a year and then, you know, we'll talk about intervention or whatever. So we had done that, and, you know, we'd actually done 2 years worth of trying before we, you know, went to kind of start that fertility treatment journey. But yeah, just nothing was happening. And, finally, in August of 2020, we had got our first positive pregnancy test. And, you know, I think I just was kind of shocked because I was expecting it to be the same as it was the last 2 years prior to that. But when that happened, you know, obviously we were really excited and we thought, okay, this is it. Like, we're going to start our family. We're not going to have any issues. And here we go. So unfortunately, at 10 and a half weeks, I started bleeding. I actually drove myself to the ER that time because my husband was away. And, you know, I just knew something was wrong. And so I was so upset and so nervous that I left my phone in the car when I went to the ER. And, you know, you're never in the ER for 20 minutes. So I was in there for 6 hours and, you know, people were blowing up my phone because they didn't know what happened to me. But long story short, you know, I just knew going in there what the outcome was going to be. And unfortunately, that was confirmed through an ultrasound that there was no longer a heartbeat. And I'll never forget the doctor came in, and I know they're not OBs in there, you know, I get that. But he said to me, you know, you're just going to have to pass your baby on your own. And I thought, this is the first time I've ever been pregnant. This is the first, like, I'm, you know, 32 at this time. Like, I've never, I don't know what that means. You know, like, nobody told me growing up that infertility was even a thing. Nobody in my family had ever had miscarriages, or at least none that they talked about. And I was like, I don't know what that means. And just being a woman, you know, woman to woman, that was very jarring to me and very traumatic. And so I ended up going back to my OB and had to have a DNC, you know, because I was too far along to actually do that, you know, pass it myself, like the ER doctor had said.
Oh my gosh. So, I'm so sorry. What a traumatic experience. Had you heard the heartbeat before that?
Yes, we did. Okay,
you have.
I'm
so sorry, Charlie. So,
it was something that you never forget, and something that, you know, I think you obviously don't wish it on your worst enemy. And yeah, I think there's a lot to be said there for bedside manner with, you know, women that are going through this experience. But so after that, you know, after the DNC, we did take a few months off of trying, just because it actually took my body about 8 months from that first miscarriage to really get back into a regular cycle again. And just mentally, I wasn't ready to go through that again. Mm-hmm. And so then over the next 5 years, we ended up having two more miscarriages. My last one was just a year ago, right around this time. Actually, the day after Christmas was my very last one. So that was, you know, we had heard the heartbeat in both of those as well. And, you know, we had done the testing and found out that we both had issues. You know, I had low ovarian reserve and very poor egg quality. My husband, you know, tested extremely low for all the male fertility factors in terms of his sperm and everything. So we knew the odds were stacked against us. We did three failed IUIs and one failed round of IVF because the insurance company wouldn't pay for any of it. So, you know, it was all privately funded, which is another, you know, another topic. But
absolutely.
So we kind of, you know, after that last miscarriage, the day after Christmas last year, we just kind of looked at each other and we're like, you know, that's it. Like, we can't do this anymore. We were tapped out mentally, emotionally, financially, you know, every way that a person can be done, we were done. So yeah, that's kind of my fertility story in a nutshell. Right.
So, you know, as you wrote in your email, you're childless turned child-free woman who, you know, a year and a half ago, your husband, you guys made the difficult decision to stop trying to move forward from infertility. And honestly, it was the best decisions we ever made, you said. So a lot to unpack here. I want to backtrack a little bit, but I also want to say thank you so much for sharing, you know, just what you've been through and the pivot that you made, because I do, you know, I've had a handful, but not enough people who I feel like have kind of pivoted from infertility and, you know, ended up child-free or childless, not by choice, however, you know, people want to phrase it. There's different ways of phrasing it, of course, but I think it's so important to share these stories as well. You know, Katie Seppi is a good friend of mine, and she's been on the show a couple times. You know, she runs the Childless Collective. I'm sure you're familiar with her, and she's been a really big voice in this space, the after infertility space, as you call it. So we're definitely going to talk about that. I love her. We're going to talk about that. But before we get to that, I do want to talk about, just backtracking a little bit, the 2 years, you know, before you guys sought treatment. Tell me about, like, mentally how that was for you. And, you know, you said that you're family, other family members, you know, were having no issues getting pregnant and all that. What did that do to you mentally? And what were you going through when it wasn't happening?
Yeah. And I guess just a little bit of backstory or context to put this into is I have suffered from major depressive disorder for about 16 years now. So my mental health has always been, you know, I don't want to say precarious. There were times when it was, but I mean, it's always something that's in the back of my mind. So I'm a very type A, you know, I'm the oldest child. Like I do everything, or I try to do everything well, you know, by the book, like do it right. And so I thought, you know, this is going to be the same thing. Like I'm just going to be able to provide my husband with children, provide my parents with, you know, more grandchildren. Like it's just, I'm going to be able to do that. And not being able to do that really mentally was kind of a like a mind F. I don't know if you swear on this podcast.
100%. Fuck is in the title.
It's a mind fuck. Okay, let's do that. So, you know, because it's something that you just can't control. And I think a lot of us, yeah, a lot of us women at least, you know, tend to be very or want to be very in control of our lives. And we are in every other aspect. You know, if you want to go be the CEO of a company, like you can do that. If you want to go travel around the world in a hot air balloon, you can do that, you know, but I could not have a child and we couldn't even conceive at that point. So it was like mentally, I felt month after month, you know, like the biggest failure that I had ever met in my life. And that was really tough on both me, but also on my husband, you know, because he just was not sure what to do or what to say to, you know, kind of pick up the pieces month after month. And at that time, before we had done any testing, like we didn't know if it was me, if it was him, if it was just, you know, we had no idea. So we were just kind of throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what stuck. And adding to that, you know, just my mental health diagnosis, it was really, really tough. Like it was just, you know, you get to a point where you're like, well, I don't really care what happens to me. Like, I don't really care if this works or it doesn't. Like, you just, you know, you kind of go back to that dark place that you thought you had recovered from, you know, because it's something that you just don't have any solution for. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, it sucks.
It's the control thing, you know, and I remember when I was going through it, I was like, it's like if you like study as hard as you can for a test and you're still getting an F, like, which is such a remedial way to phrase it. But that was just what I kept thinking. It was like, there's no other thing in life or very few other things where you can work so hard at something and you, no matter what, might not achieve success. Like it's just doesn't make sense. And it's hard to wrap your head around that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you eat the right things, you take all the supplements, you do the exercise, you know, you do all the things and it doesn't make a difference at all.
Right.
So
who were you leaning on at this time? Did you have any friends who were going through it or did you have like a support system and how was your relationship going? Because I've always been really open about how mine hit a really rough patch, you know, when we were in the thick of it.
Yeah. And honestly, I'm very grateful that my story in that respect is quite different than people I talk to as well. Because so for one thing, we didn't tell a soul that we were even trying because we had always, you know, said we weren't going to have children just because we didn't want that expectation put on us of like, when are you going to have kids? And so when we were trying, you know, we just kept it a secret. So really, and looking back, I don't necessarily think that was the right thing to do, but in retrospect too, it also allowed my husband and I to really just be each other's like complete rock and support system. And my husband was always extremely, you know, supportive, and I can't really give him enough credit for how he kind of navigated us through that. So in that respect, I'm very thankful and very grateful because, yeah, a lot of people I talk to, you know, the marriage or the relationship, it does take a huge toll. And for us, it was the opposite, but I think it's because we didn't have anybody but each other. So we were either going to make it work and we were going to wake up every day and choose each other and choose to stay, you know, in the relationship or we weren't. So,
right. Yeah, I think that's good. It does seem like it goes kind of either one of two ways. Like either you kind of can get ripped apart or you can really like bond together more. Yeah. So I'm glad that you guys were able to lean on each other. So, okay. You mentioned that you did, was it two or three IUIs?
We did three IUIs because that's all the, that was the limit that our clinic, you know, put on it before they would move you into IVF.
IVF. Okay. Mm-hmm. So tell me about doing those. Like, did you, I remember when I did the couple that I went through, the two, I believe, I was like, what is happening? This is so weird. Like, I was like, this whole process. Cause again, like this is when I was going through it, it was like 10 years ago now. Nobody really talked about IUI. I was like, what is this? Like, I had a friend who had done it, single mom by choice, but you know, I hadn't really met anybody else who'd gone through it. And I was just like, okay, this is super weird, but let's try it. So what was your take on it?
No, and even when I did it four years ago now, like it was still, I felt like people didn't talk about it. And I actually ended up finding a Facebook group that was specifically for like infertility and IUI advice. And so that was really helpful, you know, just to kind of read through the threads because I had no idea what was going on either. And I was like, this just doesn't seem like something that's going to work. I mean, I'm thankful that it's there, you know, as an option prior to IVF, although in the whole scheme of things, I don't think it's always much less expensive than IVF, but, yeah, it's just the things that we put our bodies through as women, whether you have a child or not, is just sometimes very barbaric and very like it's just an out-of-body experience. I felt like I was in the room all the time, like looking down on myself going, what in the world is happening to my body right now? So
totally.
Yeah.
So what happened when you guys moved over to IVF?
Yeah. So we, you know, and I got sticker shock when they gave us obviously the proposal or the estimate for that. But we thought, you know, we don't want to leave this time in our lives without saying that we did everything that we possibly could or try everything that we could. So, you know, we bit the bullet and decided to do it. What we didn't know prior to that, though, that we wish we would have is that at the time, our clinic did know that I had low ovarian reserve from prior testing. And so that was something that I should have done my own research. And that's a whole nother, you know, topic, but I should have done my own research. And I feel like they should have been more forthcoming with the fact that IVF is really has a really low success rate for women that have low ovarian reserve. And so essentially, what we learned after we went through it and it failed is that, you know, we would have had the same percentage of success continuing to try naturally as we would have with IVF. So that was a huge blow. That was a huge letdown, you know, after the transfer. So we got two embryos that were able to be eligible for transfer. And we decided to transfer them both at the same time because we knew like we just weren't going to be able to afford another round of it, you know, and unfortunately, neither of them took. So it was just something afterwards when we got that, you know, when we had the conversation with the fertility director that said, oh, well, it actually, you know, has the same chance of you trying naturally as IVF, given your, you know, test results. We thought, well, why would you even, we just felt like then we were part of, you know, this whole fertility business cycle where we were just another paycheck for them. And I hate to say it like that. And I don't, you know, I'm not anti-establishment or anything. And I think there's great, you know, fertility clinics and doctors out there. We just unfortunately did not get that experience. And so after that, that was the last time we did any sort of treatment. You know, we tried just naturally from then on for another 2 years. Yeah. And then that's when we said like, this is not happening for us.
Well, I'm glad that you said that because again, you know, there are some wonderful clinics and wonderful doctors and people who are 100,000,000% in it for the right reasons and doing all the things. But, you know, like everything, there's the flip side of that as well. And, you know, I've talked to several people who have felt like their personal experience was, you know, going to like, quote unquote, like a used car salesman or something, you know, you just feel like a statistic, you feel like a number, you feel like, and unfortunately, some of those places do exist. So I think it's important to note that
A, they are out there, and B, they're not all like that, you know, but I'm glad that, right, you know, you're right, sharing that that's your personal experience. And I'm sorry that it was like that, because I remember my husband at first was felt the same way. Like, we just, it was just a bunch of numbers and it was a bunch of money. And it was so, for him, it felt so impersonal. And that was one of our, you know, points of contention was, I was like, I don't fucking care about the money. I'll do anything. I'll pay anything. Right. And, right, you know, he didn't see it that way, you know, and I get it. I do get his point of view. I just didn't feel that way. So it's unfortunate that it is a business to a certain degree, yes, you know, these, yeah, but, you know, hopefully that most people don't have that experience where they feel like it's not coming from the right place.
And I think it kind of goes back to, and again, it shouldn't all be put on the patient, but in a way, you know, you do need to educate yourself prior to even getting into that situation. Like, we should have, you know, but you're in such a, it's so chaotic, you know, when you're in that journey, in the thick of it, like, you just want someone to take you by the hand and say, go this way, you know?
Totally. Oh my gosh. I said that so many times. It was like, I want someone to just tell me what to do, because yeah, it's so, yeah, overwhelming, and I don't want to, mm-hmm, screw it up, and I don't want to make the wrong decision. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm and with you, on that. You know, you trust these people to know that that's the right path for you. And it, unfortunately, like you said, doesn't always, you know, pan out that way. So,
yeah. And I think part of it too is, like, there's so much unknown, even from the doctors and the clinic's point of view. You know, mm-hmm, I've talked to so many experts who have frankly said, like, we do everything that we can, but at the end of the day, sometimes it doesn't, we can't make it work. Or sometimes it does, but we're not sure why. And we'll do the same thing again and it doesn't work the next time. You know, there's yeah, a lot of imperfections, you know, that weigh into this, and a lot, mm-hmm, of so many factors, and so many things have to line up right for, you know, a healthy pregnancy and a healthy birth to happen, that it's wild. It blows my mind, actually.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like when you're growing up, you're taught nothing except, like, don't get pregnant because, totally, your life will be over. And then, you know, it seems so instantaneous and easy. And then when, yeah, you really, like, get into an infertility journey and break it down and see it on paper, it's like, how did any of us get here, really? You know,
100%. So. Yeah, I say that all the time too. So tell me about, when did you guys, you said you pivoted from treatment and decided to just kind of try on your own for a couple of years. What was that conversation like that you guys had, where you said, we're not going to go through this anymore, treatment wise, you know, we'll just try on our own. Was that a hard conversation to have?
I think at the time we were both ready for it. And I think it took us about 6 months to really get to that point. But when we actually said the words out loud to each other one evening, like, we knew that we were just both ready for it. And it was just kind of something then that we're like, well, we're not going to not try, but we're also not going to, you know, let this run our lives anymore. We want to be able to, you know, we're later 30s, you know, we're still physically able to go do things and travel and, you know, spend time together. And we didn't want to wait until something happened that, you know, we weren't able to do that. So I think everybody obviously has to make their own decisions, but I always think that people know when it's the right time for them. And so you just get to a point where you're like, I'm just tired of this shit. Like, I just want to live my life and not have it control me anymore and go do the things that I want to do. And if it happens, it happens. And if it doesn't, you know, I'm not going to be a slave to the ovulation tests and waking up in the morning and not rolling over, you know, for 10 minutes and, you know, just all the things. Like, it just gets to be too much.
Right. Did it feel, when you both said it out loud, was it kind of like a relief?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, getting it, and I always tell people that, you know, even the people I work with, it's like, just say it out loud. I don't care if you say it to the mirror or to the wall, you know, but get it out into the universe somehow so that it's not inside you anymore. Because if you never express it, you know, out loud, then you're not going to commit to it and you're not really going to value it. So, mm-hmm, you just need to get it out and just move forward from there.
Was there something specific that you guys said? Like, was it like, we're not going to do this anymore? Or was it, we're not going to have kids? Or what did you, do you remember?
Yeah. So we said to each other, you know, we are a family. Like, this is our family. And we have two dogs and lots of farm animals. But, you know, we're like, this is our family unit. Like, we're happy with that. You know, this is a good life. We're still blessed in a lot of ways. But yeah, I remember we just looked at each other and we're like, this is our family. This is what it looks like.
I love that, Charlie. I really love that. And, you know, I was talking to somebody the other day, people who listen to this show regularly. I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself, but, you know, I have a problem with, and you can tell me your opinion on it, when people say, don't give up, like when it comes to infertility. I don't like that term because I think that it makes people who pivot and decide to go a different route feel like they failed or they gave up on something. And it's just that those terms, I don't know. I'm trying to change that vernacular, I guess. And I'm curious of your opinion on that.
Yeah, that's like one of the biggest pet peeves that I have with this whole fertility space, you know, because you saying that to somebody just completely invalidates everything that they've been through. I mean, you don't know if that person has been struggling for 10 years, you know, to get pregnant, or if this is the very first month that they've begun to try. And we still get that a lot, at least I do, as the woman in the relationship, you know, because I'm 36 going on 37. And so people still look at me and be like, oh, well, you're young, you know, you can still try, like, don't give up. And, you know, it just completely invalidates everything that you've experienced. And so me personally, you know, I respond back to that with, I didn't give up. Like, you have no idea what I have been through. I did not give up. We did everything in our power to make this happen for us. And we made the decision that was best for our family and our situation. So there is no give, like, we did not give up just because we stopped.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And I'm looking at your email again, and I didn't even realize that we're on the same page. You actually wrote that you're harshly judged by people in the TTC community for giving up. So mm-hmm. I'm glad I asked you about that. But let's talk a little bit more about just making that decision. And, you know, I know we talked about Katie Seppi a little while ago, who's wonderful. If people don't follow her, they definitely should. You know, she's a big voice in this space. And I remember her telling me, you know, that this was such a good decision for her mental health. And I'm paraphrasing, but that there was some grief afterwards, you know, because she had wanted this life, you know, she'd wanted kids for so long and she'd wanted her life to go a certain way. So did you experience any of that, like grief walking away, or, you know, just grief for how you thought your life was going to be?
Yeah, absolutely. And I did a lot of, you know, I've been in therapy for many years, not just for infertility, but just other things in my life. And I'll never forget the one therapist I went to, you know, she said, if you think of it as, you know, your life is a string of pearls on a necklace. And so each pearl is a milestone, you know, so you are born, you graduate high school, you go to college, you get a job, you get married, you know, you have children. And if you are not able to get to that next milestone or get to that next pearl, you know, you become stuck at the one before it. And so then your necklace never is truly finished. And so you're only living a half of a life because you know, you're never moving on from that pearl that comes before whatever pearl you're trying to get to. So she said, you have to, you know, properly grieve that next pearl that you're trying to move to and turn it into something else. You know, like, that pearl may not look the same as you thought it would, but maybe it's going to be, maybe all the pearls prior to that were white and this one is pink, and it's going to be like the center of your necklace. And so it's going to just stand out and look so different, but it's also going to be the brightest one there. And then after that, you can complete your necklace. And so that always stuck with me. And I always loved that because, you know, yes, it is a grieving process that you have to go through. And I think a lot of people, you know, women especially, do get stuck and they can't move past the fact that this isn't how their life is going to look. But does that mean that you stop living? Does that mean that you, you know, essentially just stay in your house all day and curl up on the sofa. Like that's not a life either. So even if it doesn't look the way you thought it would, what can you, you know, what can you make it look like now? Like what brings you joy? What do you value? What do you prioritize? You know, those were the things that I had to reevaluate to kind of get through that grieving process of, yes, it doesn't look the way that I had it in my head, but I went back to that girl who never really thought she was going to have children. And I was like, what did I want to do then? Who was I then? You know, and while you're not the same person as you were, you know, way back before you started a fertility journey, you still have the same values and same priorities, you know, outside of your reproductive ability that, you know, you did before you started, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that, you know, just looking at your website, you talk about find acceptance and joy after infertility to thrive and live a fulfilled child-free life. So I love that that emphasis is on thrive, you know, and I've talked to people like Jody Day in this community who talks about thriving as well, who I and love her as well. You know, you talk about transforming from less than to I am and feel empowered to step into the life you deserve. So tell me a little bit more about that. What does it mean to live this fulfilled life? And what have you discovered about your life that maybe you wouldn't have if you stayed on that path?
Yeah. I mean, to me, living a fulfilled life is just, you know, making the most out of what you've been given. I mean, we're all dealt a hand of cards when we start this whole thing, right? And it may be, you know, you have some crappy cards and you have some really great cards. And so I just, you know, decided like, I'm not going to be a slave to something that I can't control anymore. And I'm going to use these cards that are actually good cards and, you know, do something with it. And so my husband and I really made this shift from, you know, well, now we can, you know, we can travel more. We can, you know, provide for other children that, you know, are not ours biologically. I mean, we have 9 nieces and nephews and we love, you know, spending time with them. They come over and we have sleepovers and, you know, we are their guardians in a sense, you know, we have really great relationships with them. And it's just allowed us to kind of see, we try to look at it in terms of not what we lost, but what we're gaining from it. And I think that was the biggest mindset shift that, you know, we worked through. All the opportunities that a child-free or childless, not by choice, you know, however you want to identify, all the opportunities that a lifestyle like that brings. I mean, because anybody, I think, like, I don't know if you follow Tiffany Marie. She's another great, like, account that I love.
I don't, but I will.
Yeah, she's very real and very honest about, you know, her journey and how she feels about it as well. But she always says, you know, you're not, you know, everybody gives up something or everybody exchanges things, you know, right? Like, I'm not a parent, so people who say, well, don't, you know, you're missing out or you're going to regret that. Well, I can't miss out or regret on something that I never had. And I do, you know, I will miss out on seeing my child's face at their first Christmas and opening that gift or seeing them get married, you know, but the parents also, people who are parents, you know, they're missing out on, you know, maybe they won't get to take that trip to Europe that they wanted for 2 weeks, or maybe they won't get to retire as soon as they wanted. Like, it's all an exchange and it's not good or bad. It just is what it is. And so it's all about just choices that we make, you know, given the situations that we're in.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I think that's such a great, great way to put it and a great attitude to have about it. And I'm sure, you know, through your podcast and you've got a roadmap for people that are going, you know, down this road. What are some other things that you've learned in terms of like, if people come up to you like around the holidays, which we're around now, you know, and say, well, why don't you have kids? You're still so young. Kind of like you said before, what are some things that you have in your pocket that maybe people who are listening can put in their pockets too to have? Because I feel like sometimes you get caught off guard and it can be really traumatizing and it can really fuck up holidays and family interactions, you know, when people put you on the spot like that. So what are some things you say?
Yeah. And I want to say first, you know, it really depends on how new you are in this journey of, you know, whether you're deciding to be done or you decided that you're done. So I don't want to make it sound like people shouldn't compare themselves, you know, to me necessarily, who's been working at this for, you know, a year, year and a half now. So whatever that looks like for you, where you're at in your journey, you know, I want to validate that for you. But in terms of, you know, just how I would answer the question, you know, when we first made the decision and people would ask, you know, I would be pretty vague about it. I would just say, well, we tried and it didn't work out, you know, and usually that would kind of, it may prompt an additional question from them, or it may prompt the whole sympathy, I'm sorry thing. But, you know, now that I'm a little further out from it, it depends how spicy I'm feeling that day. If I want to say, you know, well, yeah, you know, it didn't work out, but the next time we try, we'll be sure to let you know and let you know how it goes. So we kind of try to find the humor in it, because it really, you have to understand that I think genuinely deep down, it's coming from a place of good intentions on the person asking. And, you know, I may ask an ignorant question to someone whose situation I've never experienced too. So I don't want to, yeah, I don't think it's fair to just fire off at people necessarily. So I try to, you know, like I said, just say, well, we tried, it didn't work out, or, you know, we do have a family. You know, we have our two dogs. Thank you for asking. I also will say, you know, it's just really none of your business. And that's a completely valid answer as well. So I would love if society would get away from asking that question at all, you know, but I don't think that's going to happen in our lifetimes, at least. But yeah, so those are kind of some of the phrases that I would use. Or, you know, the other thing that works is to just walk away, like just, you know, remove yourself from that situation. You know, if you're in a crowded kitchen at Christmas and somebody asks you that, like, say, oh, I have to go, you know, get this out of the oven or something. Like, just avoid it. You know, if you're not ready to answer that question, then don't.
Yeah. I think part of the problem is the societal norm or the societal expectation that you're not living a complete life if you don't have kids, you know, which I think is just obviously such bullshit. You know, I think it really takes a lot of, you know, bravery and self-awareness to be like, this isn't working for me. I need to, you know, protect my mental health and my finances and my marriage, you know, which is one of the things that you said in your email that, you know, it was one of the best decisions you ever made. You said it saved our marriage, our friendships, our finances, and our mental health. And I think that there's so much to be said for that, and that you put all of those things first. You know, that's so great that you did that. And I think it's, you know, giving people, hopefully people listening, you know, I think it's scary sometimes for many, many reasons to pivot from an infertility journey or to stop treatment or, you know, decide your life's going to go a different way. But I think people like you talking about it, normalize it and, you know, help people realize that you can be just as happy going a different route, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't mean you failed. It doesn't mean you gave up. It doesn't mean you didn't try. You know, it just means that you're ready to prioritize and value different things now again. And it, you know, it can actually be a bigger opportunity than, you know, you've ever thought possible, because you're moving away from that place of loss. You're never going to forget. You know, you're never going to not have days where you do break down or you do get sad. And, you know, for me, like, one of the things is what's triggering is baby showers. I don't go. I won't go. I will send a gift and I will be happy for you. But I will not attend. It's just something that's triggering for me. Mm-hmm. And so setting up healthy boundaries, you know, whatever that looks like for you, I think is part of, you know, the process, and really sticking to them and not letting society dictate, you know, because it's your life. It's not society's life. You know, why are we living for society? You know, they don't care about us. Honestly, like, you're the only one that's going to care about you. So live it for yourself, you know, and do what you love. So.
Yeah, I love that in terms of setting boundaries. I also want to ask you about, you know, we talked about the terminology and like vernacular. I'm always worried because I never want to say the wrong thing or like offend anybody. Childless, not by choice, child free, not by choice, child free by choice, you know, all these different terms. Do you have a preference for how you call yourself or the community that you're a part of? Or does it, are they all kind of, is it like dealer's choice, like whatever people feel comfortable with? You know, and I'm not saying you have to put a label on it either. It's just, you know, you talk about this segment of the community. How do you refer to it?
Yeah. So I read a book when I first started this after journey, if that's what you want to call it. It's by Dr. Jean Carter. It's called Sweet Grapes. And I think it's like available on Amazon and stuff. And it's a great, it's an older book, but it's great. And after reading that, it really resonated with me to, you know, she was also going through an infertility journey and decided to, you know, be child-free after it. So she defines it, and I resonate with it as child-free, not by choice, because I think, you know, it wasn't my choice or child-free by circumstance. You could, I also like that one, you know, because it wasn't my choice and it was as a result of circumstances. But childless, just to me, again, you can identify however feels right for you, but just for me, I don't like that connotation. Like for me, that less, you know, signifies something negative. And I'm not less than a mother. I'm not less than a woman. And I'm not less than a human being just because I couldn't have children. So just for me personally, you know, child-free not by choice or child-free by circumstance, because I am free from that cycle of loss and pain and grief. And you know, it's a part of my experience, but it's not, it doesn't define me.
Mm-hmm. Perfectly said. Okay. Before we wrap, let's talk a little bit more about the resources that you provide. You have charliedice.com is your website. You've got a roadmap on there. It's like a free guide for people who want to go this route. You know, there's a lot of other resources. You've got your podcast. I love that you call it the after infertility space. I think that's really brilliant. But tell me about some of the things on the roadmap. Like if somebody's listening and they're kind of on the cusp and they might pivot and go this route to this fulfilled child-free life route, what are some things that they should think about or know or like even first steps?
Yeah. So the roadmap is really kind of my way of, I'm a visual learner. So it really helped me to kind of have a path that I could follow. I think it just kind of morphed into a roadmap because I like to travel and I like, you know, looking at maps and things. But yeah, so the first step is really, again, that vernacular, you know, changing the language that you're saying to yourself in your head and even necessarily what you're calling yourself. So one of the first steps on the roadmap is, you know, identifying as what's called no longer infertile. So a lot of us either think that we're fertile or infertile, but there's actually, you know, this third option where we're no longer infertile because we're no longer trying to get pregnant. We're no longer trying to meet the definition or the medical definition of infertility, which is, you know, you're trying to get pregnant and you can't. So fitting, you know, changing that language in your head, you know, in the daily dialogue that you're telling yourself every day is really the first step. And then, you know, it kind of morphs into, are you ready to decide that, you know, this is what your life is going to look like? And the roadmap kind of goes through, you know, how to make that decision. And also once you have made that decision, then how to start, you know, thinking in terms of child-free, not by choice, child-free by circumstance person. So I wanted it to be really, you know, simple and easy for someone to follow. And if they want more information about the steps in general, because obviously they, you know, we go a lot more in depth into it in my coaching program, but I wanted a free resource out there that anybody could have access to, you know, to at least kind of get them started to even know, you know, where to start really for this after phase.
Mm-hmm. I love that. So the podcast is called Life Beyond Infertility. You know, the roadmap, like we just talked about, everybody can find it on your website, charliedice.com. What are some other resources that you lean on, Charlie?
Yeah, I really lean on, you know, a lot of, like you mentioned at the top, like a lot of social media accounts for, you know, like Katie's account and Tiffany's account. People that are, again, like further along in this journey than even I am, that, you know, are kind of paving the way. And so that's a great resource, you know, to know that you're not alone. There are some other books out there that I've read that, you know, I'm working on putting that in a section on my website as well. But, you know, like the Sweet Grapes book. And there's also, I found too, a local, if you can, if you have one, you know, local infertility support groups, because they may not have an after infertility kind of subsector of those groups, but we're actually working on, I'm working with my local one right now to create that. Because if you're in a support group just in general for infertility, it can be very triggering when you see someone leave the group because they got pregnant or because they actually had a baby. And so we wanted to create a space that was solely for people who, you know, were done, had made that decision, and we're just trying to process, you know, the grief of that, because it is a definite distinction there and a different type of grief. So if you can find a local support group, even online, you know, that was also very helpful.
Thank you guys so much to Charlie. Check out her website. It's charliedice.com. And also, thank you. I can't thank you guys enough for so many of you running out, embracing this book that I wrote called Work of Art. It's an IVF kid learns about assisted reproductive technology. It's the first in what I hope is going to be a series all about different family building journeys. I had the best time working on it. I love my illustrator. It's about, you know, my family story this time, but I have three other books in the back of my mind swirling. So those will be coming as well soon. Probably not super soon, but soon enough. But if you guys want to check out Work of Art, you can go to my website, which is infertileafgroup.com, and the books are on there. The first 200 copies are numbered, personalized, and shipped for free in the US, but there's another option as well if you don't want a personalized copy at a different price point. So check them out. If you guys have any questions, let me know. You can also go to the link in my bio at Infertile AF Stories Instagram. But again, I just can't thank you guys enough. I have my first shipment, and I've been signing and shipping this first round of books, and it just makes me so happy that this story is going to be shared with so many, and just normalizing the conversation around IVF and family building and science and assisted reproductive technology and all that stuff. So it came from a place of love. I hope you guys love it, and I will talk to you next time.